Welcome, everyone, to episode 326 of the NBA podcast. I'm Brian Toporek, and my brain is pudding because we just participated all week at Bleacher Report in a fake GM slash fantasy league where we all took control of one team. So we are going to give you today a behind-the-scenes look at all of the madness that went down. We're going to talk about two teams' processes in particular, go over some of the other big trades that were made, and just try to piece the NBA back together because, my God, there is just pure madness that unfolded this week. Before we get into that, a reminder that you can follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. You can find our Twitter handles in our bio, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes and wherever else podcasts are found. On iTunes, please subscribe, download, leave some five-star reviews. Or we are being hosted on Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. Joining me today was my secret clandestine assistant GM of the week, Morten Jensen. Mort, how's it going?
It's going well. I'm very, very jealous that you got to do this exercise for BR, because basically being a fake GM is kind of what we have been doing together for the last 4 years on this podcast, and then you got a chance to be it for a full week while I was just sitting there alone in the darkness, feeding off your scraps.
You got the best part of it, because I would just pitch you ideas, and we would go over the fun parts, and then I would have to negotiate them, which was the frustrating part. And then I would have my app DMs blow up with 14-year-olds, which was both weird and entertaining. I don't even know. So yeah, you really got the highlights and very few of the lowlights.
This is true. This is true. I only got questions from you at like 4:30 in the morning, of course. But
right, there is that. Well, that's just our time zone difference.
I expect you to be up. Come on, answer me. Give me trade
this
insights.
This is urgent. Yeah. We are also joined today by one of BR's national NBA featured columnists, Grant Hughes, who is running the Kings this week. Grant, how is it going, my man?
Well, it depends. For me, I feel like it's going pretty well. My brain is also pudding, but if you were to poll the aforementioned 14-year-olds that were also in my DMs, I would say the reviews are a little more mixed based on how the Kings went into this and how they came out.
Yeah, I feel your pain, my friend. So we'll get into that shortly. But first, could you let listeners know where they can find you on Twitter and where they can find your work?
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at GT_Hughes. And you can check out Bleacher Report, check out the app, check out the website, if people still use websites. You know, got a few things coming out this week, a couple next week, as we power through this games-free period of the NBA season, if it's a season. I don't know what we're calling it right now. But yeah, definitely cranking stuff out every week, and you can check it out there.
And I could personally vouch, having edited Grant for years, that you really truly are one of the best NBA writers out there. Like, you are just a very smart guy who knows his stuff. You will learn every time you read one of Grant's articles. So please give him a follow on Twitter and at BR in the app. Send him DMs. We've become very well acquainted with that this week.
No kidding.
So, Mort, do you want to take over from here? Because, like, I had, you know, I was a witness to the madness, somewhat,
yeah,
at least. I mean, I didn't see it from other GM's perspectives, but, I mean, feel free to just ask Grant. I think we should start with Grant, because,
of course,
Grant, you were much more active at the start of the week than I was. I kind of laid in waiting until the end. I gave Nuggets fans a Friday news dump that they hated.
Yeah, no, I mean, I don't know that I was active by design to start the week. I didn't really have like a game plan as far as, well, let's be aggressive now before people, you know, get entrenched with their rosters and are reluctant to trade. I didn't view it that way. The first trade I did was proposed to me, basically, not in its final form, but basically the Sixers came to me and were looking for Buddy Hield. And mm-hmm. I had been, as one of the guys, you know, as we'll go further through this, I was basically trying to burn the whole thing down. And so Buddy Hield was definitely one of the guys that was available. So that ended up being, and do you want me to just go through the first trade and kind of the reasoning?
Yeah.
Yeah. So again, I wasn't looking to do anything specific with the Sixers, you know, on day one at like 9 a.m. or whenever this started to happen, but it ended up being, the Kings got Tobias Harris, Josh Richardson, Zaire Smith, a 2022 first with a top eight protection, which converts to a couple of seconds if it doesn't convey, a small trade exception, and the Kings gave up Buddy Hield, Harrison Barnes, and Corey Joseph. And the thinking there was just that, you know, Buddy Hield, you have to, this is another thing, you have to sort of integrate real world concerns into this fantasy game, which right. just like is constantly frustrating and like you're thinking in two different worlds. But so Buddy Hield was benched by the real Kings, played well, and was part of their late playoff push that, you know, got stalled essentially, but has been kind of a malcontent really the whole time he's been there. I thought he was overpaid. I thought Harrison Barnes was overpaid. Mm-hmm. And so granted, Tobias Harris is also significantly overpaid, but he's just a big upgrade talent-wise from Barnes. I think Josh Richardson is a better player than Buddy Hield, especially since he'll defend, which the Kings just don't have backcourt or wing defenders. Is a little more comfortable without the ball, which if you have De'Aaron Fox, I think the whole deal is we need De'Aaron Fox with the ball. And so that's the thinking of those two. Zaire Smith is a lottery ticket. The pick is, you know, probably going to be 2 seconds, but I viewed it as two talent upgrades, a couple bad contracts that I didn't like off the books, and just sort of thinking of, you know, better fits on the wing, and Harris is kind of a guy who I could slide in at the four. So it just felt like a talent upgrade to me, and I saved a little money. So that was really the thinking behind it. I would have loved to get Matisse Thybulle out of it, but the Sixers wouldn't budge on that one.
Yeah, yeah. I was pissed when you made this deal because I was getting ready to reach out to the Sixers about Josh Richardson and Tobias Harris, and then you beat me to it. So it's interesting to know that they pitched you on this, because I would have, I mean, like, the Kings, you know, speaking from not Nuggets GM, but Sixers loyalist-ish perspective here, like, the Kings have come up repeatedly as one of the potential Al Horford dumping grounds this summer, and Hield has always been the target just because of the reasons you mentioned. So
yeah,
Russ was the Sixers GM for the week. Did he come to you pitching Horford first, or did he come right out with Tobias and Josh Richardson?
No, you know, to be honest, this went through, as all these deals, I'm sure in your experience, you'd agree, there's, you know, several forms before they ended up, you know, where they did. Mm-hmm. I think Horford was initially the offer, and I just thought, you know, it seems silly to say this because Tobias Harris is on, you know, a ridiculous contract, but I didn't like the combination of Horford's age, his decline in play, and his also, you know, substantial contract. So mm-hmm. I think I probably, this may have been doable with Horford and Harris's place. And I just think I decided that, you know, I was already going to catch heat for doing anything that had the idea of disrupting the Kings' young core, which is kind of a fallacy because Buddy Hield's like 35 years old already. but so I was a little more interested in Harris, even though the contract's a little worse because he's younger.
Yeah.
You know, just you get a little more of the wing stuff you want from him. So Horford was probably involved at some point, but I think I just didn't want to go that old, and it seemed like his, you know, career trend line is headed in the wrong direction.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think this is the thing that we're going to find with, at least that I found throughout the week from the Nuggets perspective, but, you know, again, speaking from having followed the Sixers and knowing that we're trying to dump out Horford, you know, fans of one team are like, all right, great, let's get rid of this player. We'll identify someone whose contract lines up, and perfect, we'll make a deal. And then it's like, okay, well, why does the other team want to do this? And,
right.
You know, you speak to why, like, okay, great, Horford for Hield matches up salary-wise, but why are the Sacramento Kings taking on Al Horford? That is the, it's like the underpants gnome. Like, step one, step three is the profit. What's the step two?
Well, isn't that how yeah, exactly. they've been operating over the past decade, though, in real life?
The Kings?
Yeah. Well, let's really strip. Let's pull this all the way back to the base layer. I mean, like, the Kings have the longest playoff drought in the universe. They, you know, have just been mismanaged into the ground forever. I mean, they were suffering from another trade they made with the Sixers like 5 years ago, which was one of the worst trades of all time.
Yeah.
Just dumping salary and picks to sign like Rondo and somebody else, Marco Bellinelli or yep. something ridiculous like that. So I would like to say there was a vengeance component to this trade for, on behalf of Kings fans, but it really just kind of worked out that way.
Yeah, that makes a ton of sense.
And I assume that Tobias Harris is going to play the four and not the three in a way that they tried to do with Barnes, right?
Oh, yeah. No, I think Barnes was never a three. I mean, even going back to his Warriors days, it was so clear that he just is too mechanical of a mover on both ends to really hang with wings. And so, yeah, right. I envision Harris as a four, Richardson as a three, who really just guards whoever the opponent's best wing or guard is. And you can kind of spare Fox and Bogdanovich, who in my fantasy world are now starting together, and we're going to have to stagger their minutes because we really don't have a reliable playmaker beyond those two right now. But again, you know, we can re-sign Yogi Ferrell if it comes to that. We're not gonna think that far ahead.
Yeah, I think it's interesting because I was talking to Dan, who was running the Bucks this week, and he was saying, like, the two of us and you were probably three of the only people who are actually taking, like, real world considerations, like salary cap considerations into this. Cause you mentioned, you know, like Buddy Hield, Harrison Barnes, you're not in love with their contract moving forward. Like, we'll get to it later, but that's kind of how I felt with Jamal Murray, where it's like, I love the player, but it's like, is he going to live up to that contract? I don't know. So I was at least more open to moving him than I learned Nuggets fans are, but
well, yes, yeah.
We will get there later, because you also, you know, you said you started off hot and then kind of started pissing off Kings fans. So I think the next big trade you made was with Marvin Bagley, right?
It was, yeah. I think it was the next day. And I, you know, definitely, like, this was, I think, I mean, the approval rating was super low for this one from Kings fans, which I get because, you know, Bagley was the second pick. We won't talk about who should have been their pick at number two. You're not allowed to say that. And it's, look, you know, can't blame Vlade. Like, I took over this team how it was. Should have had Luka, didn't have Luka. But so I get the affinity for Bagley. You know, he is really athletic. He can score. He's exciting. And this is a team that, other than Fox, really just doesn't have another guy like that. And, you know, I grew up a fan of the just the god-awful Warriors teams of, you know, the 90s and early 2000s. And I can remember anybody that was like 22 or younger that showed a glimmer of anything, like, that became your guy. Mm-hmm. So I totally get how Bagley is someone that fans just didn't want to see go. To my mind, and I tried to sort of get into this with some of the commenters and in the DMs, I need you to show me a winning team that had a player with Bagley's profile playing a significant, and in this case, like, you know, 1A scorer role. And in the modern NBA, there isn't one. Because I think what you have in Bagley is, you know, a guy that peaks at, like, maybe slightly worse John Collins, who maybe isn't even that good defensively, just based on the small sample we've had. So to me, Bagley, and you can say I sold low, obviously, because I don't think that, you know, he's played two injury-plagued seasons, basically didn't play at all his sophomore year. I get it. I just don't think he's a big piece of the team going forward. I don't think he's a winning player on a good team. So to trade him, Nemanja Bjelica, who, great stretch, you know, shooter at the four. That hurt to lose him. Makes $5 million. But I got PJ Tucker, Daniel House, and an unprotected 2022 first from the Rockets for those guys. And certainly the unprotected Houston first does not look great when you consider that the Rockets are a good team right now. But this is where the ultimate real world concerns come in, which is their owner doesn't want to pay the tax. The Harden-Westbrook thing is going to cost like $88 million in 21-22. I think there's a very realistic chance Daryl Morey is gone and that whole thing just completely explodes and they sell everything and they're a lottery team. Yeah. Maybe not, but I thought it was worth the gamble to get that unprotected first. And I also feel like, clearly, my assessment of PJ Tucker is much higher than fans at large, because the list of guys who can guard centers, stretch the floor, and, you know, hang with five positions defensively is real short. There's like a half dozen guys you could get away with doing that, and he's one of them. So those were the two things. It didn't value Bagley very highly, put a lot of value on Tucker and the unprotected first, which was not the opinion of most of the Kings fans that responded to me.
See, I thought for sure that when you brought up the 2022 draft pick, that you had a different thing in mind, because that's when the potential double draft in real life could actually rear its face for the first time.
That's a factor too, and that's another reason all my picks that I ended up getting were, you know, down the line a little bit. Mm-hmm. I can't say I was specifically targeting that double draft, but that's a factor too that was not brought up once, like in defense of the trade. I'm willing to concede that, you know, giving up Bagley at this point was a big sell low, but I don't know. I just really like Tucker, and I like that pick. I think those are two huge assets, especially if you're looking at the Kings like I am, as a team that just really needs to make the playoffs, because they just haven't. And I think Tucker helps get you there. And then even if he doesn't, you've got this lottery ticket in that pick. So I don't know.
Yeah, you stocked up defensively for sure. When you look at like the top two trades that you've gone through right now, it's clear that the Kings got a defensive injection of severe magnitude compared to where they were. So that's definitely going to win games in the regular season and likely propel them into the playoffs for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. That's the hope. That's the hope in these playoffs that will never happen.
Thank God. Yeah.
We'll see.
I mean, little did you know, or maybe you did because I don't remember when Vern started taking a sledgehammer to the Rockets, but the Rockets, as of Friday or as of Saturday, are much different. Like, he traded Russell Westbrook later in the week, so that unprotected pick is starting to look a little bit better because now I think it was like he has James Harden, Zach LaVine, Trevor Ariza on the team, and then like no forwards and no setters, if I remember
correctly.
Wait,
James Harden and Zach LaVine on the same team?
Yeah.
Yeah, oh, yeah. Good luck on you're speaking of a defensive injection. Yeah, right. What's the defense ectomy, or they drew out all the defense into the syringe and threw it away.
Yeah, it was because he had Horford for a while, then I think he flipped Horford to Chicago.
Yeah.
With a bunch of picks for LaVine and Ariza, if I remember correctly.
I think that is right. Which, great to get off the Horford contract, but like you said, Mort, I don't know where the forwards or centers are on that team, and I don't know who's playing defense either.
Oh, yeah. I honestly don't even remember because I talked briefly with the Rockets today about a Michael Porter Jr. trade just because he was harassing me about Jokic all week. And I was like, Vern, I don't even know who's on your team anymore. Like, I know it's Robert Covington, James Harden, and then, like Damari Carroll, Tyson Chandler. He traded basically everyone else.
Then you didn't do your homework. Every GM has like a whiteboard set up and like, did you just think that you could do this off a Google Sheet?
We did have a Google Doc with updated rosters, but even there was like a players added column that he traded half of the players he added. He ended up trading Bagley, trading Horford, RJ Barrett, DeAndre Hunter. It's a mess.
I'm very disappointed that you didn't go out and invest $500,000 in just keeping all the information streamlined. Very disappointed.
I know. If I was a real GM, if only.
Yeah, well, that was one of the things about this project is I was getting pinged from other GMs asking about, like, so what's it going to take to get Brandon Clark? And I'd be like, not only do I not have Brandon Clark, but I think he's changed teams at least twice. So I don't even know where he is. So I can't even help you find him at this point.
Right. Let's go into your last big move was a three-teamer, which I also had some experience dealing with this week. How did that come about?
Yeah, that was, so I don't like this. I didn't like the 2020 draft at all, which I think probably most people felt that way. Mm-hmm. And I had the 12th pick and I was kind of looking. So the feedback on the Bagley trade indicated that we were a little short on, you know, younger assets. And while I didn't really feel like that was, you know, I'm trying to keep the people happy to the extent it's possible. So Nickeil Alexander-Walker was someone that I thought was a really strong buy low candidate. I think he was the 16th or 17th pick last year and was really good in summer league, hurt his wrist, and then kind of never found it during the year for the Pelicans. And I just had liked him really, you know, from his draft class. And I thought that just on its face, the 12th pick in a bad draft for Alexander Walker was at least a wash, and I thought kind of an upgrade. Mm-hmm. And so I was talking to the Pelicans about him, and I guess the Pelicans valued that 12th pick a little more, so I got him to throw in Nico Melli, who is basically my Bielitsa replacement as a stretch forward, who, you know, pretty one-dimensional, not the passer Bielitsa is. I think he's a little underrated that way. But, you know, valuable shooter who demonstrated, I think, last year that, you know, he could fit in a decent rotation. And then I forget exactly how it happened, but I think Atlanta or Brooklyn or somebody got involved as we were trying to push this trade through. Because the Pelicans wanted somebody, I don't even remember what else the Pelicans wanted, but I was also getting a couple of seconds from the Pelicans in the deal. And so I ended up just taking one from, it's an Atlanta pick, but it's via somebody else. Anyway, just to make all the parties, they have to touch to do a three-way trade. So, so that's how that one came through. That one I think was maybe a little too small time for most of the commenters to really pick up on, but I'd say that it was kind of a balance. You know, people didn't want to see the 12th pick go, but I think everybody sort of was signing off on the idea that this draft kind of sucks. So, so that one went okay.
Yeah. I mean, because it looks like, yeah, it was New Orleans got Garrett Temple in number 12. You got Melly, Alexander Walker, 2 seconds. And then the Brooklyn Nets got Jabari Parker, which, fine.
Oh, yeah, I traded Jabari Parker. I forgot all about that.
So wait a second. Jabari Parker is with Kyrie Irving right now?
And Kevin Durant and DeMar DeRozan, and oh boy, yeah.
Okay,
yeah,
that's gonna be rough in Brooklyn.
Yeah. There will not be a single pass.
No, yeah, no, yeah. I forgot about that. We had to quote unquote convince Parker to opt into that $6.5 million for next year to make this happen.
Yeah, shout out to Eric Pincus, by the way, who we had on the pod recently. He was our commissioner for the week, and he just tolerated all sorts of nonsense and worked through all of these cap machinations. I will say, like, this is shockingly accurate in terms of, like, it was impossible to use the trade machine after Tuesday just because so many players had changed teams already. So he had to, like, hand calculate all of these deals, and he was an absolute saint for doing so.
He was, but I will say we have to be balanced here. He did make me pitch him as Jabari Parker's agent on why Parker would want to opt in to that $6.5 million for next year. And I was like, is he getting more than that somewhere else? Like, are we going to pretend that this is a real thing? So come on, Eric.
Oh, that's fair. Yeah. Okay.
But then the next trade was me and you.
Yeah. Well, cause you had offered me number 12 and Zaire Smith for Monte Morris. And
that's like, right.
If I was not an idiot, I just would have said yes right away. but I was full disclosure, I was trying to get Kelly Oubre from Phoenix, who just like would not. They traded for Lauri Markkanen early in the week. They traded Ty Jerome, Mikhail Bridges, and a lightly protected first rounder from Markkanen. Got absolutely flamed. And it seems like the GM was David Gardner of the Suns. And it seemed like from that point forward, he was just gun-shy about making any moves. Because I pitched some like Michael Porter Jr. deals. That was one of the only teams I was willing to talk about with Michael Porter Jr. And nothing. Got absolutely nowhere there.
See, I think I would have felt, I can tell you this now, but I would have felt so good about getting Morris for 12 and Smith. I mean, I wonder, what was your take on the Denver fans? Did they make any comments about Morris when or if things leaked about him moving? Because I just think he's just an A-plus backup point guard that could start for you if you need him to. I was really hoping to get him for that package, but maybe I overvalued him. I don't know.
No, I think it's – like, I like him a lot. I'm a little worried – you know, he's only got one more year left on the deal, which is why I was willing to move him. And I was considering in the Oubre stuff, I was like, all right, I'll include Zaire Smith. He could be a lottery ticket for you because I know Phoenix was looking to get younger and more wings. I think I was in talks to get Justice Winslow too because he liked him more than Will Barton. So that was the rationale. And then by the time I circled back, you're like, oh no, by the way, it's gone.
Like it's gone. Yeah. I had to say that to a lot of people over the course of the week.
Yeah. I mean, that was one of the things the pace of this just moved so quickly. Like you would have concurrent negotiations with like three or four different teams about the same player just because it's like, oh, well, these are all going to fall through. So I can't just be like exclusively having conversations about Will Barton with you. Because if this falls through, then I'm like way behind the eight ball.
Well, and the thing is, too, I mean, what you're describing is really what I did, too, is kind of a shotgun approach, right? You just fire all these offers out there, most of them aren't going to hit, but maybe you get that one owner that maybe isn't paying that close of attention, maybe isn't quite as up on the NBA. And really what you're trying to do is, you know, heist, pull off a heist, really.
Yeah.
And, you know, you'd see some of these trades that would happen. The first one that came to mind that I thought was just crazy was the Grizzlies got OG Anunoby and a pick, I think, for Brandon Clark. And Clark is fine. Exciting, you know, young rookie, athletic, played well. But to me, like, Anunoby was just like a gem that I could not believe was available with a pick. So I was kind of hoping to just strike for one of those. It just never really came to fruition. I don't know if you took the same tack, but I thought that made sense, knowing that a deal like that was possible, to really just pepper everybody with offers.
Yeah, I was hoping Oubre would be that for me. I was hoping David just did not value him as well as he should, but unfortunately, I think it seems like people got... If you got a lot of offers for the same guy, it basically like makes you realize, like, oh, this guy must be good.
Yep.
So I'm not going to trade him for anything. But yeah, it was OG and an unprotected 2021 first for Brandon Clark. Wow. And then the Raptors later in the week traded Kyle Lowry for Andre Iguodala, Kendrick Nunn, and Kelly Olynyk.
And, you know, I think that trade was actually, like, fairly well-received by the Raptors fans. Am I wrong about that? I thought I don't know. This is the thing, though, right? Like, what world are we in? Are we in the world where the Raptors are looking ahead now? Because if that's the case, why are you trading Anunoby in a first? Or are we, like, but then why are you also trading Lowry? I don't know. So things got really weird by the end of the week, I guess is my point.
Yeah. Yeah, I was terrified to open the app yesterday, in full disclosure, so I didn't even see the reaction to that trade.
Yeah, we didn't even say what our trade was, do we say?
No. So, yeah, we ended up doing... I approached you because I said, you know, I'm just trying to buy seconds, basically. Like, I was trying to get stuff to push other deals, the Oubre deal and then a couple others. Denver had traded away 2020, 2021, and 2022 seconds already, so I just didn't have them.
Time to reload.
So I was hoping to just buy them, like outright buy them. Like, you know, I approached the Sixers about it first because it is tradition to sell a second round pick. But then we didn't even know if that was legal. So you said you had three, 35, 43, and 53. And then we're like, all right, let's just do it for a first, like a heavily protected first round pick that will convey into 2 seconds. But then I was like, well, what protection makes sense for Denver here to make sure it doesn't convey? Because a top 25 protected, which is what we ended up settling on, it was 2021, 2022, and that will convey into 2 seconds otherwise. That, like, theoretically has a chance to convey as a first.
It has a chance, but basically that means that, you know, the Nuggets are borderline conference finalist, basically, which is totally, it's possible. I mean, that's what they would like to be, and I think that's what they'll try to be. So that was my thinking, was like, well, I'm basically, if this turns into 2 seconds down the line, the rationale I used was I'm paying, let's call it the 53rd, because it sounds better in my mind than the 35th. I'm paying the 53rd to gamble on a shot at a late first for 2 years, basically.
Yeah.
So it made sense for me. Also, I didn't want to sit around and do the draft today. This is Saturday we're recording. Yeah. So let's just put all the cards on the table with that one. That was also a factor.
Right. Well, little did you know, Devon Dotson went 53, so it actually worked out. Yeah. Yeah.
Everybody wins.
Yeah. It worked out. It worked out well. So, you know, looking back, are you satisfied with the roster that you're left with, and do you have any regrets about the week?
I think I think so. Just looking down the roster right now, it's De'Aaron Fox, Bogdanovich, Josh Richardson, Tobias Harris, and I think I'd probably start Tucker, but I could start Rashawn Holmes. Either way, I'm happy with that. And then Alexander Walker, Daniel House, Nico Melli off the bench. Zaire Smith is kind of a maybe he'll figure it out, maybe he won't. That to me is just a better roster than one that was kind of, you know, we lost Harrison Barnes, we lost Buddy Hield, Bagley, I guess. But none of those guys were really needle movers to me. So I think the roster is better. And then I have three incoming first round picks over the next couple years that I didn't have before, and including the one from Denver that's heavily protected. So I don't know. I think that the asset pool is deeper now, and the team on the floor is better. And other than Bagley, we didn't really give up anything in terms of future assets. So I think the roster is definitely better. I'd be curious to hear you guys' opinions, and I will not be offended if you disagree, because I've dealt with disagreement all week.
I think it's interesting. I mean, you basically build an environment as well where Fox has this opportunity to really break out, where he's going to be, you know, the de facto primary guard and the primary shot taker, the primary decision maker. And I think he needs that at this point in his career. Him being the number one guy, it sounds like you've basically just put him in an optimal position to actually lean into that.
Yeah, that was a lot of the thinking. And honestly, that's a huge part of the Tucker play, is because De'Aaron Fox is just, end to end, he might be the fastest guy in the league. And he's just an elite, elite foul drawer for a point guard. So if you can space the floor more for him, which the Kings absolutely could never do with Bagley or with, you know, even Holmes, who I like a lot, Tucker really makes it possible for Fox to attack a spread floor, which is, you know, I really want to see what that might look like, because I do think Fox is ready to kind of move to a legitimate all-star consideration level. And he's still so young. So yeah, that was a big factor, is let's trust De'Aaron Fox to kind of really take a leap.
I tried to get Brian to trade for De'Aaron Fox, and he was like, oh, you know what? It's Grant who's running the Kings, and Grant is actually competent. So that's not going to work out.
It's the highest compliment you can pay.
Yeah. I did have one of, I don't even remember if it was, did you have assistant GMs this week?
Me? I had a bunch of people respond and ask that. And at first I was like, yeah, we're assembling a team of 50. Send me a resume. You know, just like messing with them basically. Yeah. And then there were a couple people that kept sending ideas, but to be honest, and this would answer the second part of your question. To be honest, I think it would have been better or would have gone more smoothly for me if I had just sort of turned it over to like a let the crowd decide every move, mm-hmm. which mm-hmm. I really didn't. I just decided to do what I thought was going to work. Right. So yeah, that would be my regret, or what I would maybe do differently is see what it would look like if I just let the millions of assistant GMs make my decisions for me.
Interesting. Yeah. Because I at some point, as I was getting close on the deals that I ended up making, and a few people who I had been DMing with got increasingly nervous. They're like, wait, no, reach out to the Kings and offer Will Barton, Gary Harris for Tobias Harris and Josh Richardson. They told me they would do it. Like, I've been speaking with Grant a good deal. No such deal has ever come up, in fact.
Yeah, there was a lot of the games of telephone really got convoluted there towards the end, I think.
Yeah. So what did you learn from this week, either about where the Kings are or just like being a GM in general?
I think what I learned about where, again, I have to like couch it in terms of public perception. I think what I took from people's reactions was that they were surprisingly like a little more patient than I thought they would be, because they sort of were really fixated on the idea of giving up a young asset in Bagley. I keep going back to him, but that was clearly the most polarizing thing that happened for me this week. And you would think, and my expectation was that Kings fans would be a little bit more open to the idea of let's sacrifice this future piece, which again, this is my opinion, is not all that valuable, to try to win now, just because they haven't won. They haven't made the playoffs forever. So I was surprised by that. I definitely learned that there was sort of more patience than you would expect. And as far as just being a GM, you know, you really learn that an asset is only worth what someone's willing to pay for it. So your valuation of something, you might be just dead set certain what a thing is worth, a player, a pick, whatever. But that really just means absolutely nothing, because it only is worth what, you know, if that 12th pick I'm trying to trade you, it's only worth what you're willing to give me for it. And you got to avoid the frustration of the sort of disconnect in valuations between different GMs, I think, to be successful.
Yeah, for sure. That was one of my greatest challenges with the Nuggets this week, with Michael Porter Jr. in particular, which we can get into shortly.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you, I mean, that's got to be the guy, nobody could seriously ask for Jokic, so did you, I mean, so he, I know I asked about him, because of course.
Vern did too, relentlessly.
but was there a contingent of fans that were like, do it, get rid of him, or, I mean, I can't imagine anybody wanted to trade him.
No. All Nuggets fans the entire week were, don't trade MPJ unless it's for Bradley Beal or Devin Booker. And
wow.
You know, like so when I started the week, like you, I wasn't trying to like blow up the Nuggets. Like they were a game away from the Western Conference Finals last year. They were the 3 seed, I think, when the season went on hiatus. They're a good team. They're young still, like Jokic, Murray in particular, MPJ, all below or at the age of 25. Like they are, that's why I was not trading Nikola Jokic. They are not in a rebuild. MPJ is the lottery ticket. Like the ceiling is multi-time all-star. The floor is a lot lower than that given his injury history. But, you know, I reached out to Washington at first because all the Nuggets fans were like, trade it for Booker or Beal. I'm like, all right, cool. I'll reach out. Washington, Beal's not getting moved. Reached out to Phoenix. We're not going to move Devin Booker. All right, cool. I'll move down the list a little bit. Reached out to the Pelicans about Drew Holiday, not doing it without MPJ. Reached out to the Blazers about CJ McCollum, not doing it without MPJ. So we were like already at a standstill where it's like, all right, these Nuggets fans are saying don't trade them for anyone less than, you know, top 15-ish star. And those GMs weren't moving those guys and anything below. They were asking for him, but, you know, these fans were like saying, don't do it.
Yeah, I mean, you were in a challenging position. And guys just generally that were GMs of good teams, I think, had it a lot harder than say, I did. Because just take like, Dan Favalli, for example, that had the Bucks. Like, what are you really supposed to do with a team that's going to win, you know, is a 60-win team again? There's just anything you do by definition is probably going to make them worse unless you can just pull off something crazy. I know he was trying to get Drew Holiday all week and came really close. And I know that he had a package of something like Bledsoe, DiVincenzo, a first via the Pacers, which was like 19th or something. Mm-hmm. And that was almost going to be enough to get Holiday. And I was telling him, you're crazy if you don't do this, because no one in Milwaukee's pissed off about losing Bledsoe because of all the playoff collapses. So just do it. If DiVincenzo is the sticking point for a Drew Holiday deal, you're crazy. But I think the Pelicans, I'd say wisely, decided that Holiday wasn't just worth giving away like that. But that's tough for the good teams, because the smart move a lot of times is to do nothing, and that sort of defeats the purpose of this whole exercise.
Right, yeah. I even got into those Pelicans talks briefly, because I think Ilyasova was in there for salary matching as well.
Yes.
But I think the Pelicans didn't want Bledsoe back, and then so I think by Wednesday I had already talked about Aaron Gordon with the Magic, because Mort and I for years now have been A, just trying to free Aaron Gordon, but B, trying to get him specifically on the Denver Nuggets. So this was my destiny all along. And I initially pitched something with Gary Harris, just because the salary matching was easiest for Aaron Gordon. Wasn't interested in Gary Harris. Liked Will Barton, but we couldn't make the salaries work. Really liked Jamal Murray, but I couldn't justify giving up Jamal Murray without getting a point guard, you know, either from the Magic. I like briefly batted around the idea of Markelle Fultz before remembering what the Markelle Fultz experience was like. So then I, you know, reached out to a couple other teams. My top target was Spencer Dinwiddie. I came up with like this crazy 3-team deal with Dinwiddie had been traded to the Spurs by that point for DeMar DeRozan. So it was a Spurs Heat Nuggets 3-teamer in which the Heat would get LaMarcus Aldridge. I would get Dinwiddie and Iguodala. And then the Spurs would get like Jeremy Grant, Gary Harris, Monte Morris. Or no, Kendrick Nunn. Monte Morris was going to Miami. And Kelly Olynyk for salary matching. So I thought that was a pretty reasonable offer for all three teams. But again, that's where like the Spurs, I had talked with them for 2 days about Dinwiddie. And they're like, no, we're not doing it without Michael Porter Jr. Okay. Like then I'm stuck. So yeah, ultimately, I got in on the Bledsoe talks briefly, but yes, I think the Pelicans ended up pulling out because they were hoping to sign Drew Holiday to an extension instead.
So did you or did you not end up with Gordon?
I did. So yeah. I ended up, I thought this thing was on life support because Thursday night I go to bed having pitched this Miami three-teamer thinking like, okay, we're in business, you know, they're not getting MPJ, but they're getting Kendrick Nunn, and that spices it up enough for the Spurs to do it. Ultimately, like, the Spurs community said, no, we're not doing it without Michael Porter Jr. The Nuggets community saying, no, you're not trading Michael Porter Jr. for Iggy and Dinwiddie. So I needed another planet point guard. Bledsoe was out, too, once the Drew talks fell apart. I'm not getting Drew without Michael Porter Jr. Okay. Ultimately, I found... I reached out to Brooklyn, and they were interested in Jeremy Grant. So we did a deal around Derek White and then Kurucs and Theo Pinson for Jeremy Grant because I knew this Orlando deal I had agreed to, I knew I was getting Aaron Gordon. So I thought I don't necessarily need Jeremy Grant as much as I once did because I'm bringing in Aaron Gordon. So, yeah, I moved Jamal Murray, Will Barton, and number 43 for Aaron Gordon, Evan Fournier, and number 15. And then all of Nuggets, the entire Nuggets community rebelled the second I traded Jamal Murray.
See, I think they're out of line. I think Gordon is just, I don't know who you'd want more as a four alongside Jokic. I think just that unlocks everything that you want from Gordon, and it hides his weakness. It just that fits so well. And I forgot you got Derek White too. I love Derek White. You could make the case that Derek White might matter more, you know, for a potential championship contender than Murray could, just because of what he can do on both ends.
Ooh, that's spicy.
Hot take, right?
Yeah. Well, I like Jamal Murray, and Mort and I have. I mean, we've spoken about him repeatedly over the years. We both like him a lot.
On the right contract.
Yeah, like, I liked him a lot more a year ago than I do now. Not to say I'm, like, out on him, but if he, you know, he didn't take another leap this year, I think it's fair to say. He had the breakout in the playoffs last year, comes into this year, and is basically, like, the same player, maybe a little better, but not substantially better. Fine, he's young, whatever, but you just signed him to a max deal. Like, if he does not continue to substantially improve, that max deal gets scary. And then this is where we're talking about the real world stuff. Like, I probably took this too far, but I'm thinking, like, well, if the cap declines, I know his contract is tied to the cap, but, like, it's only 25%. So if the cap declines, the decline of the cap is going to be much worse than the decline in his contract. And then all of a sudden, like, what happens? How do we start filling in the pieces around Murray and Jokic once, you know, Will Barton's going to expire after next year. Paul Millsap and Mason Plumlee are free agents this summer. It's going to get really expensive really quickly. Are the Nuggets willing to pay the tax? I don't know.
Well, I don't even think you need to go, you know, too far afield, even though that is a legitimate way to look at it. I think to justify moving Murray, you just sort of have to ask, well, like, what kinds of players make the most sense around it on a team whose, you know, centerpiece is Jokic? Mm-hmm. And I think, and obviously you have to price in the possibility of Murray improving a lot because, like you said, he's young. He hasn't done it yet, but boy, he's got, you know, a long time before he's past the point of that being possible, you know, impossible. But, you know, just to take White as a comparison, better defender, certainly more versatile defender. And Murray kind of needs the ball in his hands a little more to be his best self. So it may just be a fit issue, you know. Mm-hmm. I think anyone would say that Murray is a better player in a vacuum than White, which is why he makes, you know, what, five times as much, whatever, six right. times as much.
Right.
But just in terms of what you need around Jokic, I think you get a lot of that from White, and those and Gordon falls into that too. Guys that, you know, you can have him defend, you can have him cut, you can have, you know, just let Jokic run everything, and Murray is a guy a ball, you know, who needs the ball or is better with the ball. I don't know. I don't think you were out of line to make that deal at all.
Can you hop into the Nuggets stream later? Yeah. And, well, Mort, I want to ask you because I was DMing with you and the Nuggets guys about these deals.
Oh yeah.
And And you were like, when I told you that that Magic deal was on the table, you're like, accept it right now. I don't even care if you have a backup plan in place. Just start Monte Morris.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Because I think there's a luxury in having Monte Morris. Grant, you touched on Monte earlier. Like, he's a good player. Like, you can have him playing a starting caliber role, at least for the time being, until you find a different solution. It's just such a luxury to have that guy coming off your pine. So if you have that, that frees you up to move Murray. And because I share the same concerns that you do about Murray's contract, it's just a matter of, you know, how do you gauge it? Like, how do you move on from that? What do you do? Do you just play it out and risk him becoming the new Andrew Wiggins? Or are you proactive and, you know, make some sort of determination on his progress right now? And given that Aaron Gordon was in play, a guy that we've talked about ad nauseum for years, and that he's on a declining contract as well, plus mm-hmm. you get Evan Fournier, who's a shooter and can thus mimic a lot of the stuff that Jamal Murray supposedly should be able to do, and you get an upgrade in the draft by almost 30 slots, to me that just seems like a somewhat safe play, honestly.
Yeah, as part of the deal, I had to extend Evan Fournier, like, because he has a player option, so I had to, like you did, Grant, I had to negotiate, quote-unquote, with Fournier's agent. He would opt in for 2020-2021, and then I gave him a two-year extension, the max he could get, which was about $35.6 million, which I'm okay with, because, like, I don't know that, I mean, maybe he wouldn't get that on the open market, but that doesn't feel unreasonable to me, and to lock the core of him, Gordon, MPJ, Jokic in for at least 2 years gives me a real shot to see how this thing goes. And if it goes bust, like, Gordon's on a reasonable declining contract, Fournier's not on a huge one, I think I have much more an opportunity to flip that contract than I do Gary Harris.
Well, I think too that it's really difficult just on principle to sign a crippling two-year deal, right? Like, yeah. Just the brevity of the deal matters more than the dollars, I think, certainly in that case. So yeah, that's that. I think a lot, maybe some people balked at that number for him, but it's just, if it's 2 years, who cares? It doesn't matter. And also, getting off Murray's max money, if in the, you know, optimal MPJ scenario, he proves he's worth that. Now you don't have to be like, well, we already did it for Murray. Are we really going to tie ourselves mm-hmm. to this? Now you are a little more freed up to give Porter what he potentially deserves.
Yeah, so let's get into Michael Porter, because as I mentioned, like, every single team asked about him this week. And, you know, again, Nuggets fans were saying, do not trade him for anything less than Bradley Beal and Devin Booker. And I get it, because the talent and the ceiling is there for him to be that type of special player who can raise the Nuggets ceiling into a championship contender. But I don't know that Nuggets fans are taking into account, like, that's the ceiling, but what percentage chance is there of him hitting that ceiling? And if he doesn't, what then?
I know what I think. Mort, where are you on MPJ?
I'm somewhere in between. I think there's legitimate concerns, but given that he only played 14 minutes this year, I just think the sample size is too small to basically, you know, flesh out a fully informed opinion on him at this point. I've seen flashes. I also like the fact that Mike Malone really, like, made him play defense, and I think ultimately the slow burn approach has ultimately turned him into a better player than just this straight gunner that he was projected as coming in. But man, there's so many years to go on this kid. So I'm a little bit skeptical on him reaching, like, peak MPJ status. I'm not sure which camp I fall into, but I don't think he's gonna bust. But I have my severe doubts about him becoming, like, a fully fledged star.
Yeah. I think I generally basically agree. Brian, you said, you know, what's the percentage? That's the key for me. Is yes, we all agree that, you know, there is a path toward him being a dominant scoring, really big wing /4 who, you know, just crushes the offensive boards, becomes a reliable 3-point shooter, is just a total luxury as a scorer alongside Jokic. Like, that is the ceiling. But if you asked me, what's the most likely scenario? Is it more likely than not that he reaches that ceiling? Like, of course not. Mm. The more likely scenario, the greater than 50% scenario, is that one of any number of things comes up, whether his back acts up, which is a really serious concern that you should have. You know, that derails it. There have been whispers that he maybe, you know, is not the easiest guy to deal with. That derails it. He just isn't as good, and he's like a poor man's Carmelo Anthony at his peak. I mean, that doesn't do it for you. So, yeah, I think that's really one of the lessons of this whole thing is fans of young players, I think, view them as their ceilings. And for a general manager or anyone who's just trying to impartially evaluate talent, like, that's just not how it can work. I think you have to, you know, you have to think about, well, what are the downsides? And really, at the very bottom of it, what are the odds that this guy reaches that ceiling that everyone thinks is a given?
Right. Yeah, like, I don't think the Nuggets would be in a rush to move him right now, nor do I think they should be. But we're also, you know, it's not like this kid's going to be on his rookie contract forever. He has one more year, then he's extension eligible. What happens if he doesn't break out this coming season? Does he test restricted free agency? Okay, cool. Like, you know, maybe he's not willing to sign an extension because he's going to bet on himself. Or if he does break out, do you max him? And then you have Jamal Murray, MPJ, and Jokic all in max deals. And then we quickly run into the problem where, you know, we've seen this with how many big threes in years past where you've got three guys on max deals and it's suddenly really hard to surround them with depth because you just run out of cap room and you know, once you have free agents, you can re-sign them. But if you lose those guys, you're going to have one mid-level exception every summer. And then it's basically minimum deals from there and draft picks.
Yeah.
So, like, I mean, it's, that was one of the lessons that this week taught me was granted, as you said, like, if you have a young, high upside player, A, everyone is going to ask about him, but B, it is almost impossible to value him accurately unless, like you with Bagley, you're just like out on him and you just don't think he's gonna hit the ceiling outcome that he came into the draft with. But like, MPJ could, which is why I didn't end up dealing him. But I don't know, you know, like Sean Hyken, who was running the Blazers, offered CJ McCollum for MPJ and Gary Harris. Like, I don't know what you do with that.
Yeah, that's tough because, well, you just go down the rabbit hole of, well, does CJ make sense with Murray? And you know, if that is our three, Murray, CJ, and Jokic, where are we? You know, what does that get us? If we imagine a playoff series, who's guarding, you name it, and who's guarding Kawhi? I mean, who guards Kawhi is the problem for everybody.
Right.
But just as a thought exercise, like, what are we doing with this team? And maybe it's better, maybe it's not. But that is just there's the gap between, you know, a player valued by his ceiling and you know how you as a GM have to think about it is just too wide a lot of times. That would have been an interesting trade, though. Was that close?
No, I mean, Sean offered it. He was willing to do it. I was more lukewarm on it, especially because I knew I was in talks with Orlando with the Murray thing, and you know, knowing I'd get Fournier back, I was like, well, I don't need a two guard anymore. So, yeah. Would I have done it if I didn't do the Orlando trade? Probably not, for the reasons you mentioned with Jamal and CJ. I just think it's too small of a backcourt, and defensively leaves a lot to be desired. You know, again, like, MPJ is that lottery ticket. So if you do cash him in and he blows up, and you cash him in for CJ McCollum, all of a sudden, like, that was probably your path to being a realistic championship contender. And knowing who's out there in the West, knowing you have to go through, at least for the next season or two, Kawhi, Paul George, LeBron James, I think, you know, my strategy was to load up a little bit more on switchy forwards, which is where I think, like, an MPJ, Gordon, Jokic front court is very good on both ends of the court, I think.
Yeah, I like that a lot. And that's what you need, like you said. That, you know, again, we're thinking of real world teams that all got torn to pieces in this thing, but
right.
You do have to, you know, it's just, and you go with the trends too. Like, it's just, you know, wings that can defend multiple positions or bigs that can switch and stretch the floor. Those are really just the in demand items, I thought, and I think that they should be, but that really didn't seem to be the case in terms of fan sentiment. It seems like the most prized asset is assets are potential and B like points per game, which is fine. Like, that's, you know, it is fantasy. I get how, you know, that's still a thing, but I guess one of the things, if we're still talking about things we learned, is that like my the things that I value in putting a team together aren't necessarily the things that a lot of the fans that were vocal share.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think we saw that. We can get into some of the other deals that went down in the league quickly, just because I think I was very surprised, especially early on, by some of the big deals. I mean, your one with the Sixers on Monday, loved it for you, despised it for the Sixers.
Yeah.
I just, like, knowing what the Sixers ended up doing, if you look at the fake Sixers roster, they have like 0.5 small forwards left. It's like Batista, that's it. They've got Buddy Hield and Ben Simmons and Eric Gordon still. I don't even know. Austin Rivers, I think. But like no one else. And then it's Kevin Love and Mike Scott. It was a disaster. But I know the other big one that went down Monday was the Pacers Pistons deal.
Oh, boy, yeah.
Mort, I'm going to
remind me.
Yeah, and Mort, I want to like get your opinions on these, because I shared some of them with you, but I don't think I shared all of them.
No, you haven't shared all of them, and if you did, I probably would have ignored it anyway, because there were a lot of DMs. Yes.
Yes, there were. So, the Pacers, in their effort to assemble a big three or big four, I guess, got Blake Griffin and Sfi, and they gave up Miles Turner, Jeremy Lamb, and TJ Leaf.
So who's supposed to be the big three participant here?
In theory, Sabonis, Griffin, Oladipo, and then Brogdon. Because I know I tried to that was one of the first people I reached out to was the Pacers GM. I wanted to pry away Brogdon or TJ Warren and got nowhere.
Again, I'm asking who's the big one here, because Blake Griffin, a big three, this current iteration, he didn't like find a 1985 DeLorean and go back and get like an earlier version of Griffin. Like, we're talking 2020 Blake Griffin.
Indeed. Yeah.
Who's like a net negative asset, both financially and on the court at this stage of his career?
Correct. Yes.
Interesting. Yeah, that's not great. No.
No. And that's how I felt. There was a Spurs-Nets deal that went down Tuesday. Spurs got, and this is the one that I wormed into later because it was an agreement in principle. Spurs got Torian Prince, Spencer Dinwiddie, Jarrett Allen, and the number 20 pick. Nets got DeMar DeRozan and Derek White and number 41.
DeMar DeRozan is he still on the Nets?
Yes.
All right.
So it's, Kyrie, DeMar DeRozan, Kevin Durant.
And then someone else we brought up earlier.
Jeremy Grant got worked into there, but
number two overall pick, Jabari Parker.
There we go. Oh, there's Jabari.
Jabari, that's right.
Wow. So basically, I mean, whoever ran the Nets have just decided to go basically say, you know what, this is like a chemistry test.
Yes.
Okay. Can talent outwit?
What they did was they decided that, hey, look, if you add up all these points per game, we're at like
two. Right.
That's true. Wow. That might be the logic.
I don't really comprehend why you would give up assets for DeMar DeRozan at this point. Like,
yeah.
No, I mean.
And that was a lot of assets. I mean, that was, right. You know, regardless of how you feel about Prince, Dinwiddie, Jarrett Allen, number 20.
No, just Jarrett Allen alone. I mean, already, like, if I'm the Nets and the Spurs call me up, so we're thinking about moving DeRozan. How about Jared? Nope. Like, that's... Right. No. I've hung up on you, because that's not... No. Already there. That's a no-go. Yeah. Wow.
I mean, I would argue from a team-building perspective, like, well, you alluded to it more with Griffin, like, DeRozan is a massive net negative to trying to win and to your books. Like, to trade him should cost several high value picks or young guys, you shouldn't be getting them back in a deal.
Right. Yeah. And they gave up Derek White in that deal. I would argue, I would just, like, if you're asking me who in a vacuum I would rather trade for right now, it was Derek White, not DeMar DeRozan.
Oh, no question.
Yeah. Wow. Which is why I was very happy to worm my way in there and get Derek White out of the Nets onto a much more hospitable environment. Trying to think who else. Oh, the Al Horford deal. Like, the Sixers, it was So, yeah, it was Al Horford, Furkan Korkmaz, Shake Milton, and a 2020 second to the Rockets for Eric Gordon, Austin Rivers, Bielitsa, Chris Clemens, Isaiah Hartenstein. Just a pure Horford salary dump, but they had to dump Korkmaz, Shake, and take back Eric Gordon to do so.
That is a lot of assets to connect just to swap bad contracts. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Grant, maybe, like, again, it might have just been, like, you, Dan, and I were thinking about the long-term cap sheet ramifications, and we shouldn't have. Like, maybe we should have just gone the Vern route and said YOLO and traded away future firsts and whatever. And the Rockets are completely unrecognizable at this point.
No. You know what? I know I didn't play, but let me just get into that because I think I think you guys did it the right way. You are playing a GM game. The GM game is thinking long term. It's taking every factor into consideration. It's trying to lay the groundwork for the future as well as trying to stay competitive for the now, at least in certain situations. Like, you have to mimic that. Otherwise, you're just playing the game wrong. That's like playing Monopoly and then using completely different rules. Like, what's the point? Obviously, you have to take the long-term financial implications into play. Otherwise, it's just a waste of everyone's time.
And I will say, Will Gottlieb, who is running the Chicago Bulls, did a really good job of that, I think.
Well, Will is smart, so that makes sense.
Well, we mentioned the marketing trade earlier. He also did... I gotta find it.
Oh, the little trade you DM'd me about?
Yeah. I'm trying to... Oh, here we go. So it was... Thaddeus Young, Chandler Hutchinson, and number 47 for Trevor Ariza, Nasir Little, and number 14.
Oh, that's great.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a good one. He had a lot of those, they seem marginal, but he ended up getting a bunch of, really valuable assets. There were several, at least two or three of those types of trades.
Yeah, so the Bulls in this, they ran a tankathon lottery, and he had the number 4 pick. He traded that and Luke Kornet to the Wizards, traded down 5 spots to number 9, got a completely unprotected 2021 first from the Wizards, and also got Mo Wagner.
Okay, that one was insane. I'm glad you mentioned that one. Because basically he got an unprotected first for moving back 4 spots, right, in a bad draft. Is that That's like the gist of it.
Yeah.
And it's next year. I mean, and it's the Wizards pick, so who knows how good that's going to be.
Right, right.
Like, chances are very. That one really jumped out to me when I saw it. I'm glad you mentioned that one.
Yeah, and he also did trade for Al Horford. He traded LaVine, Ariza, Archie Diakono, and the number 14 pick that he got in the Blazers trade, took on Al Horford's contract, also got DeAndre Hunter, number 5 this year, and a Hawks 2021 unprotected as well.
Unprotected?
So
two unprotected picks from the Hawks and the Wizards next.
So this only, I mean, this forces me to ask, is there a winner among all of this? Like, have you guys, like, determined that eventually someone is going to get crowned champion for best GMing? Because so far, I mean, Will's got a pretty good case.
Yeah, I think Pincus is, like, going to ask actual executives about it.
Like actual NBA general managers.
Yeah, he's been talking to, like, actual scouts and GMs all week about some of these moves, which is hilarious.
Well, okay, you know what? Then let's, next time we record, we need to get Will on, because in a couple weeks we won't be able to, because, like, he's under contract somewhere.
Yeah. once the Bulls actually hire him, right. Arturis is going to see what he did. He's going to be like, come on, just do this again.
Yes.
You just made me think of another huge regret I have, which is that I had no idea the wide and easy availability of unprotected 2021 firsts, because they were apparently not very highly valued if you waited long enough in the week. I mean, that's just crazy. I mean, of all teams, the Hawks and the Wizards, who needs their first rounders more than those guys?
Right.
Well, the Cavs today, right before the draft, they gave up number 6 overall and a completely unprotected 2022 first for RJ Barrett, number 14, and a 2024 second.
Oh my god.
Yeah. Like, I got nervous trading a top 25 protected pick next year.
Right.
Like, and I'm representing the Nuggets, who are good. Like, these bad lottery teams trading unprotected picks was wild.
That is nuts. Yeah, well, yeah. That's the thing. You just got to wait it out, I guess, because those all happened after the first couple of days of transactions.
Yeah, I mean, I was, like, trying to be patient, but I think that might have ended up hurting me, because, like, the Hawks reached out even before, like, last week, before we were even supposed to start negotiating. They reached out, offered Kevin Huerter and Dwayne Dedmon for Gary Harris, which at the time I'm thinking Gary Harris is, like, one of my big salary matching chips. I'm going to need him for bigger deals. I'll circle back. And then Friday came around. I made this Murray deal. I made the other one. I'm like, oh, crap, this would actually be really good for me now. Like, I don't need Gary Harris because I have Evan Fournier. Huerter could slide in as a backup too. I desperately need other bigs. So I circled back. It's like, nah, man, I blew up my team. I need Dedmon. So that, man, that did not happen.
This GM game should basically be prolonged into free agency. And then a year from now, you should pick it up again. Oh, God. With the assets that you picked up, because I want to see how this plays out in 2022 and who comes out looking like a dumbass.
It would quite literally kill me if it goes on for a single day longer than it did.
I'm willing to do it just because I need vindication on Bagley.
Yeah.
That's true. Yeah, can we get Aaron Gordon out of Orlando? Because I'm going to look bad until he gets freed.
Yeah. Well, this is the thing. I hope this doesn't happen, but because I don't want to do it. But I really don't. I don't want to root against Bagley becoming a good player. But yeah. I'm prepared to.
Just because, yeah, I was getting ready. Like, I knew Nuggets fans were going to get pissed about the Murray deal yesterday. And I was going to approach Ross today and say, Jokic for Embiid straight up. Let's just burn this whole thing down. Mort, do you have any final questions about our GM pudding brains?
No, honestly, no. I'm just sitting here in my jealousy pool and just kind of waiting for the sweet day where I'm going to get invited to this because I want to play so badly.
I sent you the link to the other one. You can do your own that I'm definitely not participating in. Because this the one thing that I'll say about this, and maybe it was just like I put too much thought into this, but like it really did take up so much more of my time than I expected. Maybe because like I was able, you know, again, the trade machine was totally useless after Tuesday because so many players had changed teams, and I was trying to come up with frameworks that worked without making Eric Pincus's life miserable. So like just calculating these deals alone took a lot of time. And then the number of deals that I discussed that fell through, like Wednesday I went to bed, I was like, I'm just not making any moves. F this. Like, this is terrible. No one. And then Pincus let me trade Jeremy Grant, and it all took off from there.
Well, but, I actually did sign up for another game.
Oh boy.
And I chose the Bucks because you know what? I can just hang tight.
Yeah, that's true.
There you go.
That's what, well, as long as, maybe I'll sign up just to torment you like I tormented Dan all week trying to get Chris Middleton.
Oh yeah, no, no dice. I'm not. I know. Yeah. No, but you should sign up.
No, it will literally kill me.
Well, Mort, before we go, I just want to say that because I feel bad about your jealousy for not being included, if a year from now Marvin Bagley is on the All-Star team, yep, I will then reveal that you were the one that made all these moves for the Kings. So at least you have that possibility of inclusion just a year from now.
Oh, I appreciate that very much. Thank you.
Secret GM. You're welcome. Secret GM that I didn't even know was working for another team, Morton Jensen. Well, Grant, thank you again for coming on and discussing this madness. One more time, please let the listeners know where they can find you on Twitter and where they can find your work.
Yeah, check me out on Bleacher Report, all over the NBA page, and on Twitter at GT_Hughes. And this was fun, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Please, everyone, give Grant a follow, I promise. We will not tweet about this fantasy nonsense for more than a couple more days. Once the results come out about who's the best GM, I'm going to put this out of my brain forever, I hope. But thank you, as always, for listening. Hope you're staying safe out there. Please follow us on Twitter at the NBA Pod. You can find our Twitter handles in our bio, so give us a follow as well. You can also find us on iTunes and wherever else podcasts are found. on iTunes. Please subscribe, download, leave some 5-star reviews, and we are being hosted on Spreaker, so check them out on Twitter at Spreaker. Until next time, I'm Brian Toporek, and I was joined, as always, by Morten Jensen and our special guest, Grant Hughes of Bleacher Report. Have a good one, guys.
You too, Brian.